The Lord be with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Glory to you, O Lord. Lifting up his eyes to heaven, Jesus prayed, saying, I pray not only for these, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, so that they may all be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. And I have given them the glory you gave me, so that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, that they may be brought to perfection as one, that the world may know that you sent me and that you loved them even as you loved me. Father, they are your gift to me. I wish that where I am, they also may be with me, that they may see my glory that you gave me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world also does not know you, but I know you, and they know that you sent me. I made known to them your name, and I will make it known, that the love with which you loved me may be in them, and I in them. The Gospel of the Lord. Okay, now we are at the end of the farewell discourse. Oh, the joy. It's a lot of I and them and you and me and they, you know. It's good. Father Wade came for pointers this morning, you know. It's like he came to see how you preach the Gospel of John. I'm really going to go for it today, you know. Yeah, no, actually he came for Acts every day. And so just to get that in there before we begin, you know, he came to see how I would fit adoration, contrition, thanksgiving, and supplication in this, and I just did. So my job is done. My job is done. I don't know. Okay, so let me try. There's a lot going on here. It's profound, and you know. St. John Paul II made this also a great theme of his pontificate, that they might all be one. And I think it's a challenge for us to consider what unity is, and really want to consider what unity is along the lines of what Jesus lays out for us. Because I think sometimes it's like, I mean, I've been in this space. I won't tell the story that just came to mind, but when I was in Rome, I was taking a class on ecumenism. And the idea was there are any number of ways of viewing how we would all be one, like how all Christians would be one. There are actually some really great ideas being pursued by any number of different people in different what we'd call camps. I don't want to call them camps or tribes, because that destroys the idea of unity. You know, but any number of people in any number of spaces. And really, you know, for us even, a lot of the initiative is not taking place in what we would consider the Catholic Church, even though we say Catholic is universal, right? But in say, like, our own tradition, perhaps, it's we're not seeing, more of the creative attempts at unity. We see them in other places. And it's not even traditions, like, it's not in our tradition, their tradition, whatever. It's in you find it in grassroots movements, right? Of groups of people dedicated to Jesus, and looking to live as he's called them to. And out of those movements comes something like an expansive unity, right? It's like when people are together and they have their gaze fixed on Christ Jesus, then unity comes as a result of that. So there are some profound examples, and you might have some of them. You might be aware of some of them. But I remember when I was in Rome and taking my class on ecumenism, right? Which of course made me an expert on ecumenism. I was like, taking a class on ecumenism, and I was thinking the whole time, well, of course we're not going to get there. This is not a good pursuit. We're not going to get to unity. It's not a good pursuit for us. Why? Because my frame of reference was doctrinal unity. I said, we're just not going to believe the same things. So what is the point? And look, I know that I'm right. So if they're not going to agree with me that I'm right, then we can't have unity, right? What's the problem with this? There are many problems with this. The fact that it's coming out of my head and my mouth is a problem. Do you know, like, this is a big problem. One of the main problem is that where is the reference to Jesus there? There is. But it's not of a primary sort, right? It's not of the sort that we know, say, that Jesus wants to affect in us. Jesus wants to affect in us a renewal along the lines of worship and service. And here I am prioritizing something like a doctrinal overlay, right? So, no, what I'm going to prioritize is actually quote unquote the truth. Okay. We should prioritize the truth. We should be concerned to know and live into the truth of things. But it wasn't for me even the truth of who Jesus has revealed himself to be, who Jesus has revealed God to be, and why unity then would be a priority for him. It was none of that. It was just, no, like you have to believe the very particular things that I believe. Now, look, I still believe that this is true, yeah? Of course, the Catholic Church teaches only what is true. The Church is a great expositor of the truth and cannot err by virtue of her constitution, meaning that should we remain in Christ, then the truth is what comes. But it's pretty far downstream of the main things that Jesus is keen on, right? Where is our prayer at that point? My prayer was mainly to myself. Right, my prayer was mainly my own. I mean, you know, like the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, right? And this is where I was in my heart. I was thinking more to myself, yeah, what is the plan of perfection? How are we perfected in this way or that way, the other way? Well, Jesus is laying out the plan of perfection here, and yet it's unity because it's his followers focused intently on him, on Jesus. Yeah, and this is the space of, well, of course, we want to be here. And if we don't have that experience even, right? And this is part of the problem with academia generally, with our studying these things in classes and the like and searching for the right answer, as it were, is that there's no, say, prerequisite for the people in that class to love, right? There's no prerequisite for the professor to say, you know, like, I love these people dearly, and I want to see unity with them. Like, I love Jesus first and foremost, and these are his followers, and so I'm bound to them in an inextricable way. And so I'm at pains to work to affect unity. No, it's not. It's an academic exercise where you say, okay, that's the right answer, that's the wrong answer, and whatever. And of course, as seminarians, everything was the wrong answer for us because nothing was orthodox enough, nothing was, you know, conservative enough for us. So it was like, okay, great, good job, guys. That really helps things, you know. But yeah, this is it, right? And Jesus is talking about, what is he talking about? He's talking about glory. He's just about to go to his death. He's talking about glory and the revelation of glory. He is putting himself at the very center of the picture, right? He's putting himself at the very center of the story. And for us, yes, we come before Jesus. We're worshiping him. We're worshiping the one who is the way, the truth, and the life. But in no way in self-aggrandizing manner, right? In no way is this an act of ego inflation on Jesus's part. He is the way, the truth, and the life as love. Otherwise, it's just totally unbearable, right? To be the one who wields maximal authority over everybody and himself not concerned to, as he talks about the Pharisees, to lift a finger to help. No, he's not simply lifting a finger. He's lifting the entire burden. He is the one who's going all the way. He is the one who refuses to give up on love no matter where he finds himself, right? And as you look forward to the passion in John's gospel, not that we're going to go there right now, but as you look forward to the passion in John's gospel, you see that he's going to places where we would have a hard time saying love can be, but he goes there and he's bringing love the entire time, all the way, every step of the way, he's bringing love so as to bring about the victory of self-giving love. Yeah, and that's what's going on here. I'm not going to push back into Acts. I am, but I'm not. Okay, like I'm not going to do it. Blah blah blah. Okay, but You see here the shape of his prayer. It's very much that way. Yeah, we have here a lot. There's a lot of supplication. And of course, we're at the end of the high priestly prayer, so we should expect that to be the case. Yeah, we had adoration. Okay, so I said I wasn't going to do it. we have a lot of supplication here. The beautiful thing is that he is beseeching God, right, for us. So he's asking for us. And then he's asking that, of course, our lives take the shape of his. And he then goes to effect the victory. He does the work. He goes to effect the victory by which our lives can look like his. And then our lives can take on the pattern of his life, both in this high priestly prayer, adoration especially, right? Adoration, we see adoration, thanksgiving, supplication, right? What does it mean? It doesn't mean, okay, yeah, he's given us this. Okay, point by point. Yeah, we do have that instruction manual. What he's doing is re-enlivening us according to our full and full flourishing humanity. That's what he wants to do, right? And it's not this kind of escapism. We see that. And he doesn't want us to do anything or be anything other than what he is. And he wants our lives to redound to the glory of God. He wants our lives to reflect God's glory. And that means that we have to be caught up in his prayer, and we have to be caught up in humble service. We have to give our lives away in love. If we don't, it doesn't, right, okay, say something that's painful maybe for me or maybe for you. Acts won't mean a thing if we don't love. Yeah, the whole thing is to be enlivened along the lines of love. To be an ecstatic outpouring of self to God in praise is adoration, right? That's love of God. And to pour ourselves out in his service. That's what it means, right? When we look around and our heart sings thanksgiving, no matter how big our problems are or how annoying our problems are, we're thankful for them. We're thankful for the corner of creation that God's entrusted to our care. And we're asking him for the strength that we need to be in there and take care of it. Yeah, that's simply love. It's simply love. And Jesus, right here, both communing with God and then going to inaugurate the kingdom, is giving us everything we need to follow in his footsteps. Right? And if that's enough, right, we're of course preparing for the sending of the Spirit. He's enlivening us with his own life of love. He's enlivening us with his own breath so that we can live that way of prayer and love today.